This is Jerry DiPiano from Femme Pharma, and you are listening and watching the Love Miyabita podcast. Today, I'm with Dr. Catherine Sharif, and you may have heard of Catherine Sharif, and you may have even listened to several of our podcasts because Catherine often co-hosts with me on the Love Miyabita podcast. But for those of you that haven't had the pleasure of learning from and listening to Dr. Sharif, she is a professor of medicine at Thomas Jefferson University and is board certified in internal medicine and so much more. So Catherine, perhaps you'd like to share a little bit more about your distinguished background with our listeners.
Oh, thank you, Jerry. And thanks for the opportunity to co-host the Miyabita podcast again with you. So I'm a physician, internal medicine, and what I do is primary care for women. And one of the areas of focus is how do hormones affect women's health? And I don't just mean by how hormones affect your periods, but the rest of women's health, about the heart and the brain and bones and so on. So today we're going to discuss the intestinal microbiome, that is the bacteria that live in your gut.
So we often underestimate that there is a bidirectional nature of the gut and the brain, but we also know that the microbiome has an impact on our urinary tract, on our bowels, and it is oftentimes overlooked. But there are ways in which we can address this and we can ameliorate the conditions that we often complain about just by using food as medicine, which is really one of the topics that we're going to cover with Dr. Sharif. So with that, Catherine, perhaps you'd like to put some slides up for us.
So the title of my presentation is Food as Medicine, Understanding the Intestinal Microbiome. So what is the microbiome? It is the collection, it's the collective name of the 100 trillion bacteria that live on our body. So we have bacteria, viruses, and funguses, all these little organisms that live all over our body, and they're in all your nooks and crannies. And they have specific areas where they like to live. So for example, the bacteria that live on the right side of your nostril may be very different from the ones that live on the left side or under your lip or behind your ears. But everywhere in our body, we have bacteria, viruses, and fungi that live together with us. And for the most part, we live together peacefully. Now, we know that with a healthy microbiome, the more species we have, the healthier. So you want to have diversity. And it's affected by everything, including diet, stress, sleep, exercise, and hormones. Now, there's a microbiome that you're already familiar with, in case this sounds like a foreign concept, and that's your vagina. So we know that lactobacillus bacteria live in the vagina. And here you'll see on this, this is an electron photograph. And what it shows is that the green part is the lining of the vagina and the membranes. And then those blue and lavender squiggly things are the lactobacillus bacteria that are shaped kind of like a little hot dog. And they produce lactic acid, which creates a low pH or an acidic pH in the vagina. And that's actually very protective. It protects you against yeast. Protects you against unfriendly bacteria. It even protects you against sexually transmitted infections. And not only do these bacteria create a low pH, which is a healthy pH in the vagina, but they also stick to the vaginal wall as a physical barrier, and they produce natural antibiotics. And they protect you from pregnancy complications. And there's plenty of evidence that they protect us from ovarian, cervical, and endometrial cancer. Now, you already know a lot about this microbiome because many of you, when you've taken antibiotics, say for strep throat, you may get a yeast infection. And that's because when you take these strong antibiotics, they kill the lactobacillus. And then all of a sudden, the yeast that had been hanging around now have no impediment to their growing, and they proliferate, and you get a yeast infection. So that's the microbiome of the vagina.
I have a question for you. We're often asked by women about cleansing the vagina, and we consider that a no-no. You do not want to cleanse the vagina because it disrupts the vaginal microbiome in the vagina and can change the pH.
Absolutely. And the vagina knows exactly what to do to stay clean. I like to think of it as a self-cleaning oven, and I would not mess with it and put any chemicals in there. So just as the bacteria are lined up and floating around inside the vagina, bacteria, viruses, and fungi float all over the GI tract, whether it's your mouth, your esophagus, your stomach, your small intestine, or the colon, which is the large intestine. This is an electron micrograph of these organisms floating around in the small intestine. And those finger-like projections are the lining of the small intestine, and there's a lot of surface area you'll see in there, and that's so that they can absorb nutrients. So the intestinal microbiome, as I said, starts with your mouth, and you know that the type of bacteria that you have in your mouth can affect whether or not you get cavities or gum disease. And then there's bacteria in your esophagus, and then down in your stomach, which is this pale pink shaped, organ right here that I'm outlining. There's more bacteria in there. And then the stomach goes into the small intestine right here, and it picks up with this squiggly light pink thing that looks like worms. That's your small intestine. It's about 20 feet, and that has even more bacteria in it to process food and protect the lining of the intestines. It has more bacteria than the stomach does. And then finally, the small intestine, as I said, goes on for about 20, 22 feet, and then it terminates right here on the left of the screen, and where the colon is, or the large intestine. So the colon is much larger, and it's about 5 feet long, and it goes up on your right side, across as the transverse colon, like right under your stomach, way above your belly button, and then it takes a sharp turn on your left side, and it goes south, it goes downstream like this, and then it ends right here, and this is where the sigmoid colon is, and then that ends in the rectum and the anus. So you have about 90 trillion bacteria, or 90% of our 100 trillion bacteria in our body, 90% of them are in the gut microbiome, from the mouth all the way to the anus. And as you go further and further and further down, there's more and more bacteria. So what are the functions of the gut microbiome? Well, number one, the job is to metabolize nutrients. So you break down and absorb nutrients, and you also manufacture vitamins. So let's take a closer look at this. When you swallow food, see these green dots that are going into the stomach. The stomach mechanically shakes up the food and makes it into much smaller pieces. And then these smaller pieces move here into the small intestine. And so that's where a lot of the nutrients are absorbed, especially refined carbohydrates. So if you have a cookie like I just did because someone brought them to work, and I knew I didn't want it, but I desperately wanted it, right now it is sitting in my small intestine, and it is broken down into tiny, tiny pieces, and all those calories will be absorbed, all the fat, sugar, and protein, very little protein, I'm afraid. They will all be absorbed in the small intestine because they are broken into particles that are so small, they're easily absorbed. And that's why when we eat processed foods, whether they're sweets or whether they're crackers, anything that's not like whole grain, will be broken down in the small intestine and absorbed very efficiently. And that's why we gain weight with refined carbohydrates, or I should say, ultra-processed foods.
I was going to ask you about dieting. So what happens when we, we're all, trying to get in better shape. We're looking for different ways in which to stay at a healthy weight. And so I'm curious about diet. I guess you're going to get into that. But if we start to change our diet, do we start to see a change in the microbiome?
Absolutely. Diet affects the microbiome 100%. And so when we don't eat well and our diet consists mostly of processed or ultra-processed foods, foods that do not exist in nature, what happens is we select for the bad bacteria, and we don't nurture the good bacteria. The good bacteria really want whole grains and high fiber foods, and they're not being fed when you're not eating high fiber foods, and so they dwindle, and then we get an unhealthy microbiome, which leads to so many health problems. So most of the calories of processed foods, refined carbs, are absorbed in this area. And then you move further down to the colon. Now, in the colon are most of the beneficial bacteria that very much want us to eat high fiber foods, because that's what they live on. And so if we eat high fiber foods, and there's a picture here of raspberries, one of my favorite fruits and one of the highest fiber fruits we have, it's actually one cup of raspberries is 8 grams of fiber, and which is remarkable. And I'll give you an example. I always thought apples were high fiber, but in fact, apples have at most 3 grams of fiber for a large apple. Same for an orange, 2 to 3 grams of fiber. But one cup of raspberries, frozen or fresh, has 8 grams of fiber.
And it's incredible.
Yes. And think about it, that when you eat those raspberries, they are not going to be absorbed here in the middle, in those 20 feet of small intestine, because we're unable to break them down because they're high fiber. But then they get down to the colon, and that's when the bacteria start working on them. And so they surround the raspberries, which are broken down into little bits. And then they start making small chain fatty acids. And this small chain fatty acids is really what we're after. Acetic acid, which is actually vinegar, and butyric acid. And what these acids do is they are anti-inflammatory. When you don't have a lot of them, you'll have joint inflammation and everything hurts and your muscles hurt and so on and so forth. So the prize at the end of all this, the high fiber foods, the unprocessed foods, is small chain fatty acids. And that's why fiber is so important to you. So when doctors say you should eat more fiber, this isn't about you having better bowel movements. The better bowel movements actually reflect what's going on in the gut. And so when you have gas, when you're bloated and you have discomfort, that means that the bacteria are not happy. They're producing too much gas. And it's a signal that you need to change your diet. Often when we tell people you got to eat high fiber foods, they say, well, I have a salad every day. Let me tell you, there's no fiber in salad. I mean, unless you're eating raspberries, salad, lettuce, tomato, cucumber, pepper, radish, carrots, celery. They have zero fiber in them. But salad is important because vegetables are full of vitamins and they're full of water. And so they're very important, but not for fiber. So you have to go out of your way to get high fiber foods, because that's not how we eat as Americans. Now, another thing about the large intestine, when we eat too much meat, uh, a, our bodies weren't designed to eat too much meat. And if you want to know what too much meat is, it's probably what we eat. It's, three or four ounces, okay, but that's not how we grew up. And we look at meat as a source of proteins, and that's why it's good for us. And there's a lot of marketing that's gone into that. And in fact, we just don't need that much meat. This is aside from questions about ethics and how animals are raised and so on. So when you eat meat, it has no fiber in it. But the problem is, so actually, it can be easily absorbed in the small intestine because it breaks down. But the problem is, when we eat too much meat, and then a whole bunch of meat ends up here in the colon, and it starts to rot. And I know that there's this big feeling like, oh, red meat is bad, but chicken is good. Chicken is very similar to red meat, and it will also rot in your colon if you eat too much of it. And so when it's rotting in there and fermenting, it produces bile acids, and bile acids are something we don't want. They increase inflammation and they make us feel rotten.
So when we think about how we ought to, what you're suggesting is, it's not that you have to eliminate all red meat or chicken or what have you from your diet, but it's the quantity. So if you're consuming a 16 ounce veal chop, that's probably too much.
Yeah, really, 16 ounces, please. It's, family of four. Yeah, so yes, you don't have to stop. You just have to eat less, and your body will be happy. And please don't worry that you're not getting enough protein. Trust me, you're getting enough protein. But that has been used as a marketing ploy to scare people into eating more meat.
If we do think that we are deficient in protein, what are your thoughts on consuming whey protein, those types of supplements?
Well, those kind of supplements are healthy. We need a variety of, proteins contain amino acids, right? So we need a variety of amino acids. Some of them are essential amino acids, which we can't make, so we have to get them from our diet. And so it's fine to try other types of protein, but not just one thing. And don't forget beans. We're not big bean eaters, except you and me, Jerry. We're from the same part of the world where they are more likely to eat beans.
Yes.
Another thing is, like, if you're not sure what to eat, think about what did your grandparents eat or your great-grandparents eat? Where are they from and what do they eat in that area? Because everyone here in this country, except Native Americans, came from somewhere else. Now, another function of the bacteria that live in our gut is to maintain a healthy barrier so that bacteria cannot slip into the bloodstream. And what you'll see in this drawing here is on the left is these are intestinal cells, and they look like a little bit like tombstones. And then they have those finger-like projections, which is the purpose of which is to provide a large surface area to absorb nutrients. And you'll see that they have very tight junctions between these cells, and no bacteria can slip through, okay, to the bloodstream, which is underneath. And so that keeps out the bad bacteria from getting into our blood and making us septic. Now, you've heard the term leaky gut, and what this refers to is when the connections or the junctions between these cells that are lining the gut wall become looser. And this happens when you're sick with certain medications, like if you take too much ibuprofen. So what seems benign, you really have to be careful with. So when you have a lot of bad bacteria, viruses, or funguses, or you take certain drugs, or you have certain illnesses, these connections become weak. And then you'll see right here is that bacteria, funguses, and viruses slip through and end up in the bloodstream. And then they're carried around all over the body. Now, the immune system is also affected by the bacteria in our gut. And in fact, 70% of our entire immune system actually is in the gut. And the bacteria in there trained, the bacteria that are in our gut train the immune system cells, the white blood cells, how to attack invaders. Don't attack yourself, right? So when you attack yourself, that's an autoimmune disease. The bacteria also produce antibiotics that protect us. And when you have an overabundance of bad bacteria, the immune system doesn't work right. It's an extraordinarily complicated system. The gut also communicates with the brain. And Jerry, you alluded this to this earlier. It's a two-way street.
Yeah, it's a bit, we've learned more about the bidirectional nature of the gut and the brain, and we talk about things like brain fog. So we hear a lot of this from women as they progress in the transition from perimenopause through postmenopause and postmenopause, where we talk about brain fog. I'm not saying that we can attribute all of it to diet, but diet does play a big part in this. And we often find that when we adjust our diets, and I could speak from personal experience, adjusting the diet, changing the diet, does help with cognition, does help with mood, does change the level of anxiety. So you tend to feel better when you eat well, when you eat a healthy diet. It makes sense to me. And there is a lot, there's an abundance of research that we are gaining, particularly the insights as to how this specifically and particularly impacts women as they see the decline in estrogen.
Yes. So, you know, menopause, we've talked about this before. Menopause is defined officially as 1 year since your last period, but we often use that interchangeably with perimenopause. All the years before that, we're experiencing symptoms that reflect the changing levels of hormones. One thing women often complain of during these years, late 30s, 40s, and into 50s, is that they have more anxiety or more depression or just a low mood, and that they have brain fog. And the estrogen has an effect. Absolutely, all sex hormones have an effect on the makeup of the bacteria in the gut. And we're only beginning to understand how they do. So did you ever have, let's say you were anxious and then all of a sudden your stomach just doesn't feel right. So that's one direction, right? I feel anxious. Now my stomach doesn't exactly hurt, but it doesn't feel right. I have anxiety stomach. Well, you could also have, say, some sensations in your stomach and then feel anxious secondary to that, because it is a two-way street. So the signals, as Jerry said, go both ways. We also know that, there's great evidence that obsessive compulsive disorder is associated with certain bacteria in the gut, and that we might do a better job treating it if we treated the microbiome and not just use drugs to try to figure out brain chemistry, because it's also gut chemistry. Autism spectrum disorder appears to be related to the makeup of the gut bacteria, and I'll talk about that more in a sec. So what are the consequences of an unhealthy microbiome? Well, I'll tell you, every day at work, I hear people say, well, I was diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome. And, you know, for over 30 years, I've asked myself, so what is irritable bowel syndrome? Well, it's diarrhea or constipation. Yeah, but what is it? Those are symptoms. And irritable bowel syndrome is a name given to, I don't know what to do about your symptoms, but I know that your gut isn't working right. And I will bet that irritable bowel syndrome has to do with the makeup of the bacteria in your gut, and it is related to your diet, and that, you know, you may have had doctors say to you, well, eat more fiber, but they never explained it. And in fact, if you ask them, so what has fiber in it? They might not be able to tell you too much. It might tell you take Metamucil, You know, but I think that advice, eat more fiber, I've heard it over and over from my patients. That's what their doctors tell them, but they don't tell them exactly what it is. So they go eat more salads and then they still feel rotten. Other consequences. I think the consequences are endless. In all the different ways that you can feel rotten, there's so much that you can blame on the microbiome. So chronic fatigue, abdominal bloating, reflux, autoimmune diseases like ulcerative colitis and Crohn's, multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, psoriasis, eczema, lots of mood disorders, Parkinson's, and even colon cancer. And we know that colon cancer is more common in people who eat a lot of meat. And remember, the meat ends up in the large intestines, it starts to rot, it forms bile acids, and bile acids, there's a direct connection to colon cancer formation.
Catherine, there has been a recent increase in the rise in colon cancer, particularly in younger individuals. And based upon what we are better understanding about the gut microbiome and the increased consumption of processed foods, the correlation between the consumption of processed foods in a younger generation, so in many generations before us, our grandparents and parents, and even some of us on this podcast, we grew up with fresh fruits, vegetables, fish, meats, what you could buy at the butcher shop, what you could buy at the produce stand. Not so true in subsequent generations. What are your, have you seen any of the data and what are your thoughts?
Yes, our collective diet is worse than ever. We are more disconnected from our roots. Young people have way less exposure to the foods that our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents ate. And there is a gigantic agribusiness industry, international, that creates foods that don't exist in nature. And they have it down to a science. And for example, you know, our listeners will have heard that soda is so sweet because pretzels are so salty and they're supposed to go together and complement one another. So that when you eat, when you eat chips, you feel like having a soda and so on. And everything has been carefully orchestrated to make us want these more than ever. And, you know, like the how satisfying the taste is, the way that our taste receptors on our tongue, the way they so want fatty foods and salty foods and sweet foods and so on. And so I think there's so many people that don't eat fresh food on a daily basis. How could we not have more colon cancer by this point? So how do we get a healthy microbiome? Well, I'll tell you, it would be healthy if you were born with one. So we used to think that babies came out and they had a completely, what we would call a sterile gut. No bacteria anywhere from the mouth to the anus. They were just pristine. But now we know that the fetus is exposed to the mother's gut bacteria. And this could be good news or it could be bad news, depending on who your mother is. So you need to choose the right mother. And then we know that when you have a vaginal delivery, the baby picks up the mother's gut and vaginal bacteria. And that's the healthy way to do it. When you have a C-section, the baby picks up the mother's skin bacteria. And if you look in the children, even when they're 7 years old, you look in their gut and see what's growing in there, you'll still see a lot of those skin bacteria that don't belong in the gut, and there's way less diversity. And remember, a healthy gut is a diverse gut. So those children whose mothers have had C-sections are more likely to have ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, type 1 diabetes, celiac disease, asthma, and be overweight. And what do most of these have in common? These are autoimmune. So that means that the immune system was not trained properly when the incorrect bacteria were there. Now we know that, you know, and this is not to blame any moms because they had to have a C-section. But there are areas of the country or areas of the city where there's a whole lot of C-sections in one place and a whole lot of vaginal births in another place. So a lot of it is discretion. Now, breastfeeding versus formula. When you breastfeed, you you are contributing to the microbiome, and it's much healthier for the child than formula. And there's more diversity. And children whose mothers breastfeed are less likely to have asthma. And again, asthma is related to the immune system. And some wonderful news is we know that if you had a C-section, if you breastfeed, you can help to reverse the effects of having had a C-section. And again, I don't want to blame women for not breastfeeding or not pumping. This isn't a country that has welcomed it in the workplace. Now, another way to heal the gut, so start out with a good gut. Another way to do it is the stool transplant, if you're up for that. And so I always say, I want a stool transplant from someone who's smart, attractive, and has a lot of money. But anyway, it turns out that people who have C. diff diarrhea or Clostridium difficile diarrhea, we call it C. diff for short. These are people who have usually had way too many antibiotics, and then this certain type of bacteria, C. diff, gets a hold of the colon, it takes over, and you can die from it. And people do. Maybe 30,000 people die in this country every year from C. diff because you give antibiotics over and over and over, and you cannot kill the C. diff. But you're killing all the good bacteria. So stool transplants or fecal microbiome transplants, FMTs as they're called, were introduced over 10 years ago, and they are the best treatment for C. diff. There is a 90% cure rate. And the way it works is you take someone's healthy stool. And this is a picture here at the bottom of stool in these syringes. And they are squirted into the colon. And 90% of people are cured. And that is that, right? So you get bacteria from healthy people. You can also do it with freeze-dried capsules. Yeah, it takes about a quart of these. And sounds delicious. And you can get them down that way. And you just hope that capsule does not dissolve until it's in a place where you can't taste it.
I would assume that this is reserved for some of the more, these very difficult cases. So those individuals that do have C. diff, and not for someone that simply wants to adjust their gut microbiome.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So it's not something like you can just do casually, but the thing is that these stool transplants are available for the people with C. diff, but only maybe 10 to 15% of people who are eligible are getting them. And all these other patients are just being put on antibiotics. So even though we understand this and we are able to do it, most patients with C. diff aren't even getting it. There are also plenty of studies done in ulcerative colitis and Crohn's, showing that the stool transplants can make a difference, put people in remission or cures. There are studies with multiple sclerosis. But unfortunately, as you said, these are not available now for us. Now, you know, just to be able to get casually. But what's so interesting is it proves the hypothesis that changing your gut microbiome will help you get healthier. It's been shown to improve depression, bipolar disorders, alcoholics. Everyone acts like alcoholism is like, you know, you're weak, you can't control your behavior, you know. But the thing is, if you change the bacteria in the gut, alcoholics stop craving alcohol. And then when you give the stool from alcoholics to mice, they become alcoholics. So you can do it in the opposite direction. One of the things that nearly blew me away when I read about it was when autistic children were given stool transplants and their autism improved significantly. And kids who had difficulty speaking were able to speak and to make eye contact. And that really blew my mind because I thought that autism or like schizophrenia, like obsessive compulsive disorder, I thought that's the way your brain is. And, you know, how do we fix it? When actually these are things that can be changed. And so this is the strongest, the stool transplants are the strongest absolute argument for making the gut healthier. They're, you know, not an argument to do stool transplants. So first of all, stop antibiotics and stop taking them. Stop asking your doctor for them. Stop asking me for them. I cannot tell you how many people, they have a virus, they have it for a few days, and then at the end of 3 days, they're like, hey, I got to get over this. I have to do this. I'm traveling on Saturday. I have to get back to work. So you need to give me an antibiotic. No, no, and no. You still have a virus and it's uncomfortable and get over it. You know, and, you know, I feel terrible when I have a virus. I feel pathetic and like a big baby, but I don't call my doctor and ask for antibiotics. Don't ask us for antibiotics. It is, you are doing yourself a huge disservice. And decrease NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Now, we can also heal the microbiome by decreasing meat, decreasing fat, stop refined carbohydrates, and all ultra-processed foods. I think one of the worst foods at the top of the list that both rots in your colon and is ultra-processed and absorbed in the small intestine is cold cuts. And, you know, there go our hoagies in Philadelphia. So we also need to decrease alcohol.
So interesting that you list the antibiotics on the list, because to your point, there are individuals that really don't appreciate the difference between viral and bacterial infections. And if you have a bacterial infection, your doctor will determine that it probably makes sense. But we know that there's been an overuse of antibiotics, which has contributed to antibacterial resistance in the population. And it makes it very difficult to find an antibiotic that works. So I believe that at the top of the list, we can look at this in a variety of different ways. The decrease in NSAIDs, we know that there is an overuse of NSAIDs in the population. They have their place. But obviously, if they are overused, we also know what it can do to create some erosions in your esophagus in particular. And then you become tolerant in some ways. So you need something a little stronger than your OTC NSAID. So we've seen evidence in this. We tend to try to find more and better. And unfortunately, we've created this vicious cycle.
We have. The antibiotic overuse is one of the greatest threats to our health. I worked at an infectious disease hospital in Cairo a number of years ago, and I saw children and adults dying every day from treatable diseases like Shigella, Salmonella, things that are easy to pick up, the traveler's diarrhea. They died because they were resistant. The bugs they had were resistant to every kind of bacteria, every kind of antibiotic that we ever made. And that's because of the overuse of antibiotics and the ability to get them without a prescription. I can't tell you, Jerry, how often patients think that I'm withholding something that they need And they get really angry with me when I won't give them antibiotics, especially for sinus infections. Very few people have bacterial sinus infections, and it hurts and it's uncomfortable. But most sinusitis is either viral or allergic. Very few people have actually bacterial sinusitis, but they want bacteria. They want to do something. And then another thing that happens is they go to urgent care and they may have a $50 copay. And then the urgent care doctor feels all this pressure to give them something because people will throw their hands up and say, well, you know, I paid all this money and I'm not going to get anything. The answer is yes, but too often they get an antibiotic. People need to stop.
And then when they continue to use, so this goes back to the discussion that you had around C. diff. So if they continue to use, try one after another antibiotic because one doesn't work, so a stronger one may work. And then there's a third one that's prescribed because they're resistant to the third one. By the time you administer the fourth antibiotic, you've probably created a situation where now you have the Clostridium difficile. And your option, your only option, is what you just discussed, which is a fecal transplant or these pills that you need to consume in mass quantities.
Yeah. It's you are doing yourself no favor by taking antibiotics. You have got to save them for when you need them. Let's talk about one of the most important ways that we can improve the microbiome, and that's with probiotics. Mainly, I'm talking about fermented foods. So probiotics, they can come as a supplement or they can come as foods. And as with most things, foods are more powerful than supplements because supplements are often very high doses of one type of bacteria or another. So let's say you get a probiotic supplement that's mostly lactobacillus and bifidum, two very good bacteria. But the thing is, you can have such an overgrowth of them that you crowd out all the other good bacteria. You're much less likely to do that if you eat food which has a variety of bacteria. So I believe this food right here with the spoon, that may be cottage cheese, or maybe cottage cheese is here below it. So cottage cheese, surprisingly, I remember in my mother's day, it was considered diet food. And if you went to a restaurant, you could get the diet platter, which had like a pear from a can with a scoop of cottage cheese on it. Yum. So cottage cheese, surprisingly, has a large amount of bacteria. And if you can alternate with yogurt, if you don't like yogurt, you can eat cottage cheese. Other things that have a lot of bacteria in them, down here is kimchi. So this is fermented cabbage. And then sauerkraut over here on the left. And then tofu and other soy products on the bottom, they all have bacteria in them. Do you have a favorite probiotic?
So I love kimchi. I have, over the course of my life, had sauerkraut and pickles, but my favorite is yogurt. So I do love my yogurt and eat yogurt every single day.
Wow. Any kind of yogurt that you like?
So I do the Greek yogurt, and with the Greek yogurt, I will even it out with a banana, some raspberries, some blueberries, some blackberries.
Oh my God. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, I am sick to death of yogurt. So what I have almost every day is kefir, which is a yogurt drink that came from the Middle East. And I get strawberry flavored and I have a glass of it and I just drink it down. And some days I don't feel like it and I do it anyway. And I just say, just shut up. This is your medicine. Take your probiotic. You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to make my own pickles. I like pickles that are half pickled. And a note about pickles for our listeners is that pickles can be pickled in vinegar or our cucumbers can be pickled in vinegar, or you can get pickles that are fermented. There's a kosher type one, I forget what it's called, that we have in the Philadelphia area. But anyway, if you wanted to make your own pickles and they are fermented, you would, you can look up the recipe online. But basically, you get those small Kirby cucumbers and put them in a container with a very salty solution. And within 24 hours, it's already cloudy and they're making a lot of bacteria. And that's really good for you. But so right here in the middle of this picture is pickles, but they have to be fermented, not made in with vinegar. So probiotics, fermented foods are very important. But what is more important? And this is our last slide, and it is prebiotics, which is the name given to fiber. They're called prebiotics because the prebiotics are the food that the good bacteria in our gut want. And up there on the right, on top, is the blueberries and raspberries, which are so high in fiber. So 1 cup of raspberries, 8 grams of fiber, 1 cup of blueberries, 4 grams of fiber. And I would like you, our listeners, to think about how could you as a woman get 25 grams of fiber a day? And it's closer to 40 grams for men. Again, with your salad, that's going to add up to zero. So can you, what can you put together that you like? Now take a look at this apple up here on the left, only maybe 3 grams of fiber at the most. However, if you look at the fiber tables, you will learn that pears have 6 to 7 grams of fiber, so double or more than what an apple has. So every day I eat a pear, whether I like it or not, and I feel like, okay, there goes 6 grams of fiber, which I subtract from my 25 grams requirement. Other high fiber foods, there's so many of them. Like 1 cup of cooked broccoli is 4 grams of fiber. 1 cup of cooked spinach, 4 grams of fiber. And what the research says is that probiotics are even more important than prebiotics. Prebiotics, the fiber, is more important than the probiotics. So we have some good bacteria down there. There are definitely some. But what they desperately want more than anything else in the world is for you to eat fiber. So remember, 25 grams a day for women, about 40 grams a day for men. You have to look at the tables, see what kind of food you like, and do it day after day. Do you have any favorite high-fiber foods?
So with in terms of my high-fiber foods, I do like steel-cut oats. So I love eating steel-cut oats, and I do so in the morning. I do eat sweet potatoes. So as you know, I grew up on a Mediterranean diet, and we were always encouraged to do that without really understanding what was a probiotic and what was a prebiotic. We ate fish, we ate legumes. Surprisingly, we did not eat a lot of pasta, but we did consume a vast amount of produce. So broccoli, asparagus, spinach. So pretty much everything that is on this little table and more. Kale, before kale was popular. But we were raised on a diet that consisted primarily of vegetables, some fish, and lots of legumes.
That's wonderful. So what our parents and grandparents knew, and then what Americans have forgotten, we have to relearn again. So we have to sit down and figure out what makes sense. What do you like? What can you do every day? Can you find it? And so on. Can you bring it to work? Can you feed your children this way? But I think our lives depend on it, and we have to do it. I'll tell you, my favorite fiber is avocados. And I'll tell you why. One small avocado is about 10 grams of fiber. And I'm not a great cook, So it's wrapped up in this package. I rip off the package. I just eat the avocado like it's my job. And I can't say I enjoy it very much, but I mean, avocados are wonderful food. But that is a lot of fiber, 10 grams of fiber. So it's one of the highest fiber vegetables. But you know what? We can have a healthy microbiome. We have to work at it, and it is so worth working towards. And in fact, I don't think we have a choice, which brings me to my last slide, which is you can create a healthy microbiome. And it is your, you can't wait for anyone to do it for you. You have to educate yourself.
And you can increase that diversity as you age, or you can decrease that diversity as you age. And if you're a woman who is in the menopause transition, we have to be intentional about how we put together our diets, because let's face it, we're busy. We may be working. We may be taking care of our families. It could be that you have young children or adult children. Look, we still take care of our adult children, and maybe you even have grandchildren. But you come first. You need to fill your cup up first. You've heard me say this numerous times. If your cup is empty, you cannot share with anyone else. So first and foremost, you need to be intentional about your diet. Yes, we joke about our little menno pooch, but the menno pooch may be a sign of something that's bigger than you or I. And it really comes back to having an unhealthy gut microbiome. And as you just heard from Dr. Sharif, this impacts various aspects of our life, from the development of or exacerbation of autoimmune diseases, to start with the A, to issues regarding other kinds of disorders, including certain malignancies. So we need to pay attention. That doesn't mean that we have to give up our favorite cheeseburger or, God forbid, our hoagie with all of the cold cuts. But we don't want to do it every single day, and we do want to think about what we put into our bodies. And we need to remember that will serve us well through life, even though we might not like the pooch. We might actually see some improvements in that menopause pooch if we pay attention to what we're putting into our bodies.
Yes, we had that. What you said about being intentional, that really strikes me, because we don't live in the Mediterranean. We don't live in Italy. We can't. We have to relearn. Most of us have to relearn how to eat well.
Absolutely.
And it's not going to happen by accident.
Absolutely. And as I always start my conversations with my own daughter, did you eat today? This is the mother in me. Did you eat today? And what did you eat? So this is a generational thing with me. But really what I'm getting to is your diet does form most of what we know to be a healthy brain and a healthy body, and one that will give us grace, or we can give our bodies some grace for a very long time if we just do some of the right things.
Yes.
Well, Dr. Sharif, it was a pleasure having you once again as my co-host. And for those of you that have been listening to this podcast, and as we always say, this information is just that. It is information for you to take into consideration. We encourage you to do your own research, and we also encourage you to consult with your healthcare practitioner, because anything that you hear on these podcasts, while very well formed, researched, and from professionals, is just that. It is not the advice and does not replace the advice of your personal healthcare practitioner. So with that, I wish you well to your gut health and to your overall health. This is Jerry DiPiano with Dr. Catherine Sharif signing off on the Love Mia Vita podcast.